So we'll take up the legislative proposals for 2015. This, again, is a briefing. Dan Larson.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Ann.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So for the record, my name is Ann Larson. I'm the legislative liaison. And today I'm going to talk about the 2015 agency request that's going to be submitted to the governor later this year. Just to talk a little bit about timeline, I know Owen already talked a little bit about this, but in May we had the programs actually submit their draft proposals. The directors already had the review. EMT has had three opportunities to look at the different proposals. Today is your opportunity, and we're hoping in 2 weeks to have your approval on the August 15th conference call. September 19th and October are going to mark the dates that we need to have our proposals submitted to OFM and the governor's office.
Could I interject just one thing?
Sure.
Sorry, two. So we know this is a complicated picture with some really significant decisions to make for you. And so what we have, what I've discussed with Chair Wecker is that depending on the outcome of today's deliberations, talked about the idea of having the August 15th conference call be an opportunity for you to come back and provide us any input that you want, changes that you want us to look at. And then we have tentatively set up, or we have set up a conference call on August 22nd. Mm-hmm. So because I was anticipating giving the gravity of the decisions, the gravity of some and the implications mm-hmm. of some of the pieces in the package, we would want another opportunity to delve into any of these components a little deeper that you may want to before asking you to make a final call. So there's a footnote in there that August 22nd it would be potentially the final approval, with August 15 being a date that we could have a little bit more discussion and answer any questions that you may have or entertain other ideas that you may want us to look at.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So just to provide a little context for the 2015 session, as Owen mentioned, it is a biennial budget year. It's also an election year where we have all of our 98 seats up in the House, and then 24 of 49 seats are up in the Senate. The Republicans are pretty well poised to hold the Senate. There were 10 possible toss-up races. Six of them were Republican. Two of them were the majority coalition caucus members that were Democrats. That was Sheldon and Tom. And then there were two Democratic seats. If the voting in November mirrors anything that we had in the primary election, the Republicans will hold the Senate and pick up a few seats in the House, actually. It is going to be a 105-day long session, but as we've already mentioned, we're anticipating that we'll have special sessions, if not multiple special sessions. Rumor is that we'll be out maybe sometime in June. So, at this time, we have seven proposals that are moving forward for the 2015 agency request. The first two I'm going to have the director speak to in just a moment. We have a shellfish excise tax, an aquatic invasive species bill, payment in lieu of taxes, fishing charter guides, and hunting under the influence. In the packets, or the fact sheets that I gave you this morning, the color fact sheets, you have 3 through 7 in that, where we don't have anything for the first two. So the first two, the recreational fishing license increase and the commercial fishing license increase, are both placeholders. And I know that the director was going to speak a little bit more in detail on those. I do want to note that although we're not really talking about the hunting fees specifically having any increases, just as a note, there may be some minor increases to the hunter fees to increase hunter participation and recruitment. I know Dave Ware spoke about that earlier today. They are pretty minor, and they really have an overall net impact to revenue in this proposal. So So, Director, did you want to speak to those bits, or we're going to kind of come back to those?
With your permission, I'd like to come back to them after you go through the balance of your presentation.
Perfect.
Particularly in light that Owen's running up to get me something, I need to do that.
Excellent. All right, the first proposal that we're going to talk about today is one regarding commercial shellfish excise tax. So the problem is there's a black market in Washington shellfish, and it's increasing with the increase of public demand. Shellfish enforcement is currently inadequately funded in the marketplace, shipping terminals, and also on our Washington beaches. There's also an increased public health risk from the illegal harvest, and this threatens the sustainability of a resource with negative impacts to an industry that brings in over $270 million per year. What we're looking to do as a solution is remove this exemption from the excise tax on enhanced food for bivalve shellfish produced via aquaculture. We would establish a new rate that is levied at 1% the taxable value. And the revenue generated by this proposal is in upwards of $900,000 a year. And what that would be used for is to be pay for 5 enforcement officers. Some of the additional funds, because there is a balance, could be used to pay for the Department of Health biotoxin fee. So that's something that we're currently looking to resolve that issue. The second proposal I'm talking about today is on aquatic invasive species. Currently, invasive species present an enormous threat to Washington's environment and their economy. If zebra quagga mussels came and were infested Washington waters, it's estimated to cost the state over $100 million annually. AIS are commonly spread through aquatic crafts such as shipping vessels, recreational boats, and trailers. And the current funding levels are also inadequate to pay for key prevention activities. And these type of things would be education, outreach, ballast water planning, and then watercraft check stations. If you recall, we had engrossed substitute Senate Bill 6040 pass the 2014 legislative session this last year. It did pass, but it didn't pass with funding to implement the policy of the bill. For this proposed solution, it's going to be actually taking different phases, and phase one of this would be a funding strategy for aquatic invasive species with a focus on prevention. We looked at several different fees for different user groups, but it was so many. We had 20 different user fees in one single bill, and it would have ultimately been too big a lift to get through in this single year. Right now, we're looking to provide adequate funding to implement those prevention activities for AIS and ballast water management using the following funding sources. A redirection of the 4% watercraft excise tax that's currently paid by the recreational boaters at this time. Those dollars would go from the state general fund to the wildlife account, and we're looking at about a $500,000 redirect on that. If you recall from last year's proposal, that was the primary funding source for our AIS proposal. We had a much larger amount, but we're only looking at a modest amount of about $500,000 now. The second idea is to create a new $5 invasive species voluntary donation at the time when boaters renew their their annual watercraft registration. This donation would be based on how parks do their opt-out donation with their vehicle registration. Assuming a 20% participation rate, we are looking at about $250,000 per year. The final piece of this would be establishing a new commercial vessel shipping fee at $300 per arrival for ballast water management. Vessels that would be included in this category would be those that are greater or equal to 300 gross tons. So we're looking at the really large shipping vessels. With this, we're anticipating about a little over $1 million dollars per year, and the total revenues on this are proposed at $1.8 million per year, and all of those, again, would go to aquatic invasive species prevention. The next one has to do with PILT, payment in lieu of taxes. PILT payments are designed to compensate counties for a loss of property taxes on parcels owned by Fish and Wildlife. Currently, there are multiple methods for calculating PILT payments to counties. Instead of PILT, counties can elect to retain their game violation fines and forfeitures. Counties have expressed frustration after the legislature froze those PILT payments at 2009 levels for the past two biennium. This frustration has further led to a lack of support for Fish and Wildlife land acquisitions. And then also in 2014, the governor directed agencies to review and revise the current Fish and Wildlife PILT program. The proposed solution is based on that study. The proposed solution would use a single calculation of PILT based on open space valuation. It would also remove the requirement that PILT payments are frozen at those 2,000 levels, and then it would also remove the requirement for counties to choose between game violation fines and forfeitures or PILT. Instead, the counties would keep both, so it incentivizes. The final two proposals don't have any fiscal impacts. They're policy proposals. The first one I'm going to talk about has to do with charter fishing guides. The current problem is that charter boat operators and fishing guides can purchase license stamps that are good for one day of fishing and then go ahead and resell these stamps to anglers for fishing trips. Some unscrupulous charter boat operators and guides are intentionally reissuing these used stamps. Current statute does not criminalize for this fraudulent behavior, and the state is actually losing thousands of dollars of fishing revenue. The proposed solution would discourage charter boat operators and guides from reissuing stamps by making it a crime. The violation would be a gross misdemeanor. This proposal is heavily supported by the charter boat and guide fishing industry. And if you recall, Representative Litton also ran legislation during the 13-15 biennium, which was House Bill 1896. Both years it made it to Senate rules, but it did not pass the state legislature. And then finally, the last policy bill, disappeared. Has to do with hunting under the influence. Hunting under the influences poses a huge risk to public safety. It's currently illegal to hunt while intoxicated, but it's difficult to enforce because it does not require a field breath test. The crime of hunting while intoxicated also does not carry a mandatory suspension of hunting privileges, which could act as a powerful deterrent. What we're proposing to do is increase the clarity of the offense, apply the implied consent to breath test while hunting, also mirror BUI and DUI laws that penalize failure to provide a breath test with probable cause, and then impose a mandatory suspension for hunting privileges for 2 years for the first-time offense and 10 years if the person has a previous conviction. And that concludes my presentation. If there are any questions,
thank you.
I can answer questions on the first one while the director.
Okay. Any questions? Commissioner Kehoe.
Sure.
Yes. And I have a question about the shellfish excise tax.
Mm-hmm.
So would that tax then, that wouldn't go to the wildlife account, I wouldn't think, or it wouldn't go directly to the department, or would it? The excise tax.
Those dollars would go to the state wildlife account, would be deposited in the state wildlife account and be directed to enforcement for those activities.
I see. Okay. Okay. That answers my question.
Okay. Other questions? Director Anderson?
Thanks. So I wanted to go over the fee increase proposals that we are looking at bringing forward to the commission for your consideration to include in our package. We started evaluating and assessing the needs from a revenue perspective, as I referenced earlier, to essentially maintain our current activities in the next biennium. We came up with several different categories of activities where we felt like we needed that our assessment revealed that we would need additional revenue in order to continue kind of the level, that level of activity, from hatchery production to ensuring that we had adequate enforcement, those types of activities. And we also, in doing that assessment, made some assumptions about the impacts associated with some of the loss of federal funds that I referenced in my earlier remarks. We looked at a variety of potential avenues for everything from looking at regional endorsements to broad-based, across-the-board license fee increases. And we did what I thought was a pretty thorough examination of all those different types of alternatives and looking at where the shortfalls from a revenue perspective and the loss of activities that we could anticipate that would occur without some additional funding. We are bringing forward a package that would propose to increase fishing licenses by $2, and with the exception of combination fishing licenses, which we would propose to increase by $1. We would anticipate that with that type of a fee increase, it would produce an additional $2 million of revenue a year, or obviously $4 million in a biennial budget. The primary areas where we would spend the revenue that would come from such a license fee would be for salmon and steelhead production, Lower Columbia River and coastal rivers. You will recall I mentioned the loss of Mitchell Act funding, and this is in part to address that federal shortfall. We would add a portion of this would be to look at essentially half of an FTE of an enforcement officer for our coastal fisheries, as well as to shore up our funding for sampling and monitoring of our coastal fisheries. Looking to Puget Sound, we would dedicate a portion of this revenue to new Puget Sound hatchery production, and our strategy would be to work through the Puget Sound Recreational Fishery Enhancement Group, which is already in statute and advises us on hatchery production within Puget Sound as the entity that would help us identify where those new revenues would be expended to support recreational fishing in Puget Sound. We also, relative to Puget Sound, would devote a portion of the revenue to enhancing our capacity to meet the challenges associated with Endangered Species Act, and specifically to ensuring that our HGMPs are revised as needed, that we would be in a position to assist NOAA in the approval process of those HGMPs, and that type of ESA permitting work. We also, of course, have our Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, which is due to be updated, and we would, so this money would largely be to add a couple of staff members to the fish program to increase their capacity to meet that demand. We would also put a portion of the revenue toward our just an overall state hatchery preventative maintenance. When we look at our funding that's going into hatcheries, our opportunity to keep pace with operation and maintenance, recognizing that we have 83 hatcheries located across the state that produce about 175 million fish a year that are released primarily for harvest purposes, obviously a very, very important activity, whether you're in eastern Washington or western Washington or anywhere in the state. This suite of hatchery operations provide a host of harvest opportunities and associated economic benefits to the state. We feel that without some additional revenue put forward for operation and maintenance, that it will undermine our ability to continue that level of hatchery production. And then finally, there's the protect shellfish and public safety. A portion of this revenue would go to add two enforcement officers that would primarily have for the primary purpose to ensure that recreational shellfish, clam, and oyster resources are adequately protected. This is primarily a Puget Sound issue, and to ensure that our recreational harvest areas are safer for consumption. So there are several different places where we've run into some significant challenges associated with shellfish harvesting in our intertidal area and the need to have some additional resources to ensure that we can continue to have those conducted in an orderly manner we identified that as a need. So those four basic categories of sustainable coastal sport fisheries, sustainable Puget Sound sport fishery, maintain our hatchery infrastructure, and protect shellfish fisheries and public safety are the four primary categories where the fees, the revenue derived from the recreational license fees would be expended. On the commercial side, I'm going to do a little bit of this from memory, so my numbers, I think, are going to be close. But right now, it costs about $580 to renew your commercial license, if it's a gillnet license or a purse seine license or a charter license. I believe the fee is about $580. I'm really close if that's not spot on. For that type of license, $110 of that fee stays with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We had that change made several bienniums ago, maybe it was the last one, to account for the costs associated with us managing and administrating those commercial license systems. $100 of the $580 goes to the RFEGs, the Recreational Fishery Enhancement Groups. And then the balance goes to the general fund. Our proposal would be essentially to double the fee for those licenses, so an increase of $580. Based on my best memory, and I'll look to Owen, I believe that raises about $800,000 a year.
About $1 million
a year. Thank you. And we would propose putting that revenue into some similar areas as we did the previous my previous description. But so for salmon production in coastal areas, particularly in the Mitchell Act piece, where there's a commercial fishery benefit from the hatchery production in the Mitchell Act facilities below Bonneville Dam. We would have some targeted enhancements to coastal hatchery systems, hump tulips being one, ensuring that we can maintain Bingham Creek hatchery. We have two facilities, Nacelle and NEMA, in the Willapaw. The NEMA in particular provides benefits to the commercial fishery. And then the operation and maintenance piece that I mentioned would be another area where we would expend those revenues. I also mentioned we would have plans to add an enforcement piece, so another half an FTE of enforcement to match up with the other one for the coastal piece, where a lot of our commercial fisheries take place. And then we also have the piece about maintaining our management capacity within Puget Sound to provide for Puget Sound commercial fisheries. Again, in the world of ESA, our Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, while there isn't a large targeted commercial fishery, certainly on Chinook, ensuring that we have a Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan that can be permitted by NOAA fisheries that allow for any incidental takes associated with our fisheries in Puget Sound is an important component of the commercial fishery as well, in order for us to be able to continue to have those fisheries exist. So it's those kind of basic categories where the $1 million a year that would be derived from that increase would go and help try to form a base and stabilize our ability to continue to provide those commercial fisheries. So that's a brief overview. I will say that we have met many times over the course of the last 6 months or maybe even more in evaluating where our needs were, what the revenue amounts of additional revenue that we would need to meet those gaps. We have not done stakeholder work yet. We had a meeting that several of the commissioners that we mentioned yesterday, that some of the four of the commissioners attended along with me, with some of our recreational leadership here just this week. We need to have that same discussion with commercial fishing representatives. I think our some initial very unofficial feedback from our from several of the recreational representatives that we discussed this with was this is too moderate of an increase. We think and some of the needs and activities that we talked about with them that they would like us to do, we don't have funding for that. So I think there is room for discussion of a larger increase, and as an important part of that discussion, deciding where the revenue from that additional increase in the proposal, at least to date, would go. I think this is a start of the discussion. I wouldn't want anyone to think or to represent that this is final. We do need to have a package, as Ann said, to the governor by September 19th. But then we will have 3 or 4 months to work with stakeholders to take what we have proposed and refine it from there and have further discussions about what activities the revenues that would be generated from the increases would support. So I view this as this is a starting point, going to be a very fluid discussion, but we need to have something. I believe strongly that we need to have something that we propose to the governor so that he has the option to include it in his budget. And then we've got a lot of stakeholder work to do over the course of the next weeks and months to be put us in a position that when the legislative session starts, hopefully we can be at a point where we've got a degree of unity between ourselves and the people that these fees would impact in terms of support. And then, of course, we will engage in a four or five month legislative process where I'm sure the discussion will continue in a lively way. But there is no doubt, based on our analysis, that we need some additional revenue coming into this agency if we are going to continue to provide the same level of harvest opportunities and all of the things that go with doing that into the future. The one last piece that I didn't mention that's a very important piece is on the commercial license fee and that revenue. We, as you well know, have a commission policy on the Columbia River to move to more selective gear in the Columbia, in the commercial fishery, and a portion of the revenue that would be derived from so Commissioner Kehoe, not necessarily the portion that comes from Puget Sound folks, would be used to help implement that policy. I know we've got the issues associated with release mortality rates that are a big concern. It costs a lot of money to to kind of go through those study designs, make changes to them, and then we feel like we need to do some additional studies because we're not confident that the results that we got from our most recent efforts are reliable. And so we want to make sure that we're in a position to do that from a revenue perspective. So that's an additional piece of the commercial fishing license fee revenue. That's an important one.
Thank you. A work in progress. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. And let me not forget my manners. Owen, thank you very much. And Ann, I forgot to say that when you were speaking. And the director helped a lot. It's the first time I've really heard the comprehensive package, and that was helpful. I've got to be honest with all of you. Initially, I had great doubts about any fee increase. Too soon. It's only been, 3 years ago we did a major increase. Too much is needed, and likely very strong opposition from our constituents. I've changed my opinion about that. I think that we will have support, and that's so we need to aggressively look at what our needs are. Just say it again that the state budget shortfall is expected to go through at least two bienniums, 4 years, maybe more. If you look into McCleary Supreme Court decision on funding education, you start looking at Mitchell Act, we drop, even though it's only about 800,000, I think, for hatchery, I think it's going to be between 1 and 2 million. And it's anticipated we'll continue to have federal cuts. So, summarize this portion of my thoughts. A fee is needed. Again, how much? And that's kind of a legislative catch-22, because if you go in and ask too much, you may not get it. Or you'll allow yourself for them to determine where it's going to be. If you ask too little, you're going to be back in 2 years, and you probably wouldn't get it in 2 years. So it's a really delicate thing that Ann and the director and your executive body has got to go through. In applying it, I had not heard the portion to the commercial sector, so I'm glad there's some equity. Both sides are carrying it. I haven't heard, and it's probably in the details yet, but I looked very closely at Oregon's proposal because it had some catchy things. A lot of things are too cute, but that I liked, and I'll bring them up. We need to look at our out-of-state license. They did a very thorough job of doing that. We need to look at all sectors. For instance, the director a while back had said, there's the big four commercial offshore fleet is producing probably 80% of income. I'm just picking a number, but Bob said that Sainers in Straits is going to produce about 800,000. But that big four is whiting, shrimp, crab, and albacore, I think. If they're making that much, we should look at that sector as carrying their share. That's the type of examination in detail you need to do. I like the idea of going for a larger amount, but amortizing it over a period of time. And this is something I've plagiarized from Oregon. And they actually do pretty good step-ups, but they take three bienniums. And what you're saying is, one, it's not too large in any one of those bites, but it gets you where you need to be. The public knows in 6 years where you will be, and it would help cover you. And I think it's just an appropriate approach to simply try and do it all in 1 year. It just has a tremendous amount of jeopardy. And I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting, but those are kind of the key things. We've talked about the 15% already.
Dr. Anderson.
Thanks for those thoughts. I have looked at the Oregon's proposal had some discussions with Director Elliker. I know they have about a, I think the number was a $34 million problem. I mean, that number may have changed, but it's significant. And they did, it looked to me like they took a major swing at non-resident. And I want us to be careful about that. I hear from in my visits in Eastern Washington in particular that our trout fishery is a big draw from residents out of state, particularly Idaho, and it produces a lot of economic benefits to the rural areas. Tourism does, obviously, in that area. We have we need to be, I think, mindful of the balance between Oregon and Washington when we're talking about we have reciprocal agreements from a regulatory perspective. We have reciprocal agreements from a licensing perspective. So we need to be sure we're looking at what they're going to do when we think about what we're going to do with our non-residents. So obviously that's some additional work that needs to be done. I think you can only, I mean, I don't know that I have my dates exactly right, but I think we did a license increase in 2002. We did another one 3 years ago in that biennium, if I have that right, 11. And so you're absolutely right. Whatever we do here is going to have to last us for a while. We're not going to be able to come back, nor do I. What I even want to think about having to come back every year or every biennial cycle with an increase. So I think that kind of a discussion with stakeholders is an important one to have, and one that we would make a part of our discussion.
Commissioner Schmitten?
Sure. I quickly going to have the Oregon proposal because something triggered my mind about non-resident annual fishing license. They decrease it to start with, and then they increase it over the ensuing 6 years. And I thought that was a rather clever move. They're fairly expensive, $106 for an annual non-resident license. Hunting is just like out of sight. For instance, non-resident elk tag goes from 508 to 549 to 571 and 588, expensive elk. They have a one-day license that increases by $2 from 16 to 18, 18 to 20, and I thought that was fairly reasonable. But the point you made, we need to be somewhat in sync, especially if we have reciprocal actions. They have a couple things I don't think would work for us. They force their non-resident anglers for salmon, sturgeon, and steelhead to buy a package for all those at one time. And most non-resident fishers are going to come for steelhead or salmon, unlikely, but possibly the other one, but they have to buy a license for all of them. They have a $10 annual endorsement, ocean endorsement, for other than salmon. And I have mixed feelings on that. And then they have a final thing, and it's a raffle. And it's you buy a $5 ticket. It's for a, quote, unique to be determined fishing opportunity.
So,
some cleverness, anyway, in trying to get their $34 million.
I know that there's some feelings of a desire to move along here, so just
I have two quick ones. I promise. You know, I see, Director, that you have the word placeholders, and so does that mean that you go to the governor or the legislature and say, "Well, here's our 15% reduction in the general fund"? But we'd also like you to consider these other, I'm not quite sure what the term placeholders means.
I can't answer. That was just for this presentation. I don't have fact sheets or developed language. So
I see.
This isn't actually part of the director's part. It's just usually I would have language or fact sheets at this point, and I did not have that for the Fish and Wildlife Commission today. So that's me.
Okay. But still, I mean, I think the point is, I mean, you give them both options. You say, well, here's a 15% reduction. This is what's going to happen. Here's a way to generate revenue to mitigate on those effects.
Director Henderson?
I do not want them to look at it like that. Because the fee package that we have developed is to address shortfalls at our current funding level. These fees are not designed to compensate for some large general fund reduction. We had been working on this for, like I say, 6 months, and then along comes the 15% cut. And so you're going in two different directions here. On one hand, as Owen went through, we have some very basic needs in order to continue our current service delivery. And on the other hand, we have some gaps that we've identified. So the combination of those two packages is what we're hoping for as an outcome. We have no choice but to give this package, but I want them to look at these in it separately.
Well, I'd like to talk with you more about that, at least with respect to Puget Sound. And then I promise one
absolutely
last thing.
Go ahead.
I would ask the department to at least consider for now an option allowing for a public-private partnership with respect to Puget Sound commercial fishing, similar along the lines that we've already had in place for Hood Canal hatcheries, which basically would provide, it's like, okay, the state doesn't have the money. We've got a private partner that's willing, you know, a nonprofit corporation that's willing to step in and either provide the employees to do it or pay the state to pay for these. So I just want to kind of put that out there and have the state, the commission, consider that as an option. Not a preferred option, but just putting it out there.
Do you want to respond or just... Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know that that's what I would say, but I hear, and that's just, you know, essentially, we need to, from a commercial fishery perspective, we have got to figure out how to get out of this box where we have had our general fund cut by $50 million. Which, in the old Department of Fisheries, I've said this 100 times to folks, it was a general fund supported department. It wasn't a fee supported agency like wildlife. And when it merged over the last 20 years, that has gotten blurred. And so, you know, we all know the numbers. We've gone from 110 million general fund down to something around 60. In a relatively short period of time, the general fund was predominantly used in five different activity categories, and we have got to figure out a way that we can have the commercial fishery help support the activities. Not all of it. I'm not suggesting that at all, because it's. But we have to figure out a way to have a greater level of support for the activities associated with providing those harvest opportunities.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks so much, Ann. You're doing a marvelous job.